Happy New Year! It's GM Nathan here on behalf of the entire Reckless Attack crew, hoping your holidays were filled with joy and love, or at least as much pain avoidance as possible. I am here for a special schedule announcement. We've been making our show for more than 3 years now, and making those couple hundred episodes has been one of the greatest, most fulfilling parts of our lives across those years. And across that time, there's been a lot of personal growth and joy, but also personal change. Life is very different for us now than when we started in 2021. So, unfortunately, in 2025, we plan to reduce our frequency of actual play episodes to make sure that our quality can meet and exceed our already high standards. The plan is bi-monthly actual play episodes with the fourth week as Reckless Attack. Also, for our patrons, this won't affect our monthly output there. Our Reckless Snacks, Adjacents, Talkbacks, and other fun stuff will come out pretty much as usual. Thank you all so much for your support these last few years, both for us as podcasters and as people. Appreciate you. Enjoy the rest of the episode. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome once more to Reckless Attack, a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast. I am, as always, your GM, Nathan, and I'm very happy that I really crushed that intro. It'd been a couple weeks since we last recorded, and I just, like, shut down the right neurons in my brain to just, like, let it flow out again, and ooh, it felt so smooth.
Perfection.
And so nice. Exactly. That's why they pay us the big podcast bucks. I am joined
by... Wait, you guys are getting paid?
Bigly. By the wonderful players here at the Reckless Attack table, starting with the individual on my left.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sophie, and I play Valeska Carter, the human asterisk cleric asterisk of the Arcana Domain.
I forgot it already, and it made me really happy.
And Val is mad. She's angsty. She's sad. She's a lot of emotions right now because she's, I don't remember if
you're
we left
slimy.
Off. For sure slimy. Cannot wait to get out of this cesspool.
You're pretty pale. You can like see veins through your skin was kind of the aesthetic. And you have gills.
See, like most of that, I think, is not the worst part of Val's day, but it's pretty close.
Which is the worst part? Or is that
I feel like the cesspool is probably the worst thing right now.
Yeah.
Because
fair.
Like the gills could be fine if she was in clean water. They could be better.
At the moment, she is not.
Mm-mm. And to my left.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and I play Checkers, the Grung Druid, and his trusty frog pals, Mango and Junior. And Checkers is really excited to start Agmar's first aquatic-themed adventuring guild, starring Checkers, Kaskrin, and Valeska.
That's true. All underwater missions are now fully on the table.
Exactly. If you need anyone to go search for buried treasure or fight the Kraken, you know who to call. It's us.
It's us.
I don't have a good name for it yet. I was going to be like Golden Gills, but that doesn't really
work. The Golden Tree Gills?
Yeah, Golden Tree. Ooh, I like that one.
You're like the deep diver segment of the guild. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got something there.
Yeah. And to my left.
Hi, everyone. I'm David, and I'm a liar. So I've been saying that Kaskrin has been a Sorlock / Warlock for a couple episodes here, but unfortunately, I must reveal to all of you that actually I am not a Warlock.
0% Warlock.
It's true. After level 8, when I respect everything, I am 100% Sorcerer. But it hasn't quite worked out with my intro yet, so I'm going to say I play Kaskrin. The Dwarven Warlock.
No, lies.
The Dwarven Sorcerer. It doesn't rhyme as well. I'm going to figure it out. And to my left.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steve, and I, as always, remain unspect. Unrespect? unrespect.
You continue to be specked.
Unrespected? No.
No one respects nothing has
Steve.
Changed with Sel.
We're not. We can't do a Johnny era. Oh, my God. What's his name? Rodney Dangerfield bit at this
moment.
Right,
yes, okay.
And you all remain instead of a cave. Sort of. You guys actually, last we left our heroes, are ascending from the cave, is what we'll say, which seems like, in terms of episode time, you've been in this cave for like
a minute.
12 episodes now.
Yeah.
But finally, the darkness is at an end. Thanks to the brave, bold, selfless efforts of the adventurers of the city, namely the Verdant Wave. One notable thing that we, you know, kind of just peppered in right at the end of the last episode is that another individual was there with you. The Pious, the member of the Bones that you guys rescued way back when, thanks to the help of a magic net, was there to help as well. And this is, of course, Checkers' net.
Mm-hmm. That is, it was always Checkers' net from the very beginning.
Has always been. Through time immemorial, it was created to be Checkers' net. And it's just been on temporary loan for the last handful of weeks. And just when Checkers was like, oh, hey, by the way, you do owe me that net. Something happened. Something happened. Namely, it started glowing.
So Checkers is in this dark cave while Valeska and Kaskrin are getting loaded into these barrels of water. And he sees the Pious with this glowing net that belongs to him.
Yes.
As is his saint's given right.
Mm-hmm.
But then he also notices that the net matches the net in the mural. And it's just like, all right, Saint Stillwater, if you want me to keep this net, don't say anything. All right. Y'all heard that. Does the Pious look like they are actually able and willing to give the net up?
Yeah, so what I was going to say is that the Pious actually, during the course of this, has looked down and obviously noticed it as well, perhaps even felt something, you know, kind of it reacting, and has looked down and has actually wandered over to you and is kind of jostling with, it's like, I believe the net is, it's reacting to this place. Your net, Checkers, is doing something.
If you say it often enough, it becomes true. Net, Checkers.
I was actually walking to the lake earlier today to try and give it to you. And he does actually kind of like shrug it off. It's been, you know, he previously was just kind of wrapped up in it very haphazardly.
Uh-huh.
But it's actually been kind of stylized almost like a shoulder cloak. You know, kind of like a side cape almost.
Cool.
And he, you know, kind of like gets it off of him and hands this glowing thing over to you.
I'm going to grab it from them and just wrap it around myself, kind of in a similar way to how they were wearing it, because it looked cool.
I'll tell you, Checkers, because your frame is smaller, the net is like a little bit closer together, so it is more kind of obviously a cape. So it actually... Wait, hold on.
How cool does it look?
Yeah, it looks better on you.
Oh, nice. Wow. Yay.
Unfortunately.
Great. Now I have ultimate power. I don't really feel anything.
everyone just looks over from holding a rope to see that you are wearing this glowing artifact. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be like holding my hand out to various puddles of water, just trying to like still them.
They're already still.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's all supernaturally very still in here. So Checkers can take that as he will.
Kaskrin finally gets pulled up from the well, and he's got his little head poking out and just saying, if you guys could move me some clean water pretty soon, that'd be all right by me. And he looks around and says, oh, it's you guys. And like he knew, but nothing really prepares him to see the Guild of the Verdant Wave, to see Kavos, to see Trenkar again, to see, most importantly, Yanis Varga.
Indeed.
And I'm imagining, as his guildmates are lifting us up, he's kind of standing in the background with this like smug look on his face.
I would say the smuggest look in the room is coming from Kavos.
Sure.
Because Kavos is right up next to you and is like, crouches down a little bit and has his huge, shit-eating, needlepoint grin right in your face. And just, we'll get you a water change as soon as we're able, I'm sure. And Yanis is actually, he is looking distressingly neutral, like superiorly neutral, if that makes sense, where he's not openly being disrespectful of you, but he's not really acknowledging you, which is almost worse.
Okay. And Kaskrin just lets out a thanks as he looks at Kavos. And I imagine it gets like set down over to the side while they're moving Valeska up.
Oh, yeah. Just unceremoniously. Yeah. Beryl, you get put kind of right next to where Selv and the Pious and Checkers are all kind of fussing over this net.
Okay, cool.
Checkers, seeing Kavos continue to work at the ropes, realizes that he has an opportunity to finish Selv's story. Because Selv was insistent on not telling Checkers who won the tournament. So he's going to go up to Kavos and be like, "Hey, Kavos, Selv was telling me about the tournament that you were at, and he said that he won. Is that true?"
"That's not exactly what I..."
Kavos, his eyes fix on you immediately, like a predator's gaze, in a way that tickles your froggy brain since time immemorial. And his lizard-like draconic eyes squint. He says, "How much did he tell you?"
"Well, he told me about the Titan Beetle that you rode, and that was pretty awesome. And then he told me about how he jumped across the rooftops to go chase someone who was poisoning people, and that was pretty cool too. And then he told me about how he won the tournament."
And Kavos, his face is still looking directly at Checkers, but his eyes kind of dart over for just a moment over to Selv. And he gives you just a tiny nod of approval. And he looks back at Checkers, and he says, "That sounds like Selv's story to tell." And Kavos kind of turns around and starts heading back to the rope, but he pauses for a moment, and he looks back over his shoulder at you, Checkers, and he says, "Actually, the Titan Beetle story isn't mine to tell either. Barzug!" And he goes over to the fourth member of the Verdant Wave, the kind of dwarf rager who is just biceps rippling, hauling on this with her short, kind of short side cropped hair. And I think she has a mohawk, if I recall correctly. She certainly does in this moment. And she's doing the like heavy man where it's like strapped around her waist and she's just like backing up kind of deal. And he goes over and just taps her on the shoulder. And he says, "Here, let me take your spot. The frog wants to hear of the beetle." And she looks up at him, looks down, quickly unties her rope super fast, and he has to like catch it. It's so fast. and
splash.
And she goes over, and it occurs to you that you have seen her and actually have seen, I think it was Yanis in it too, but both of them are sporting black armor. And you can tell that she has an axe, actually, that's made of this almost like obsidian-looking material. And she just reaches back and pulls out this huge two-hander battle axe that is preposterously large. Like, a large creature should be wielding this, not a small dwarf. And she's like, "Oh, you want to hear of the Titan Beetle, do you? Ah, well." And she just like clumps it down. "We were about 6 days out from Agmar. We'd been searching for days. The creature had been terrorizing populaces and starts launching into you get the full unabridged story of how they were riding it. And actually, this was made from a baby Titan Beetle. And she's very proud about how sharp it is and offers to slice things. Like if you have like a watermelon sitting around or like
a hand.
Yeah, a piece of paper or like a match or something. Like, we'll slice literally anything you want. Do you want to I'll slice that net? That could be really cool."
Checkers just pulls out like 60 sheets of paper that he has for coloring and just like slides it across the edge of the axe and it just splits in half cleanly. And he's like, "Nice."
It doesn't even, from your eyes, your perceptive eyes, it doesn't even look like the blade touches it. It is like the air molecules around it are so sharp that it's cutting through the air into the paper.
The paper is so scared it's splitting before it gets precisely to the blade.
Great. And that's how Checker spends the rest of his time here. The net completely forgotten. The Saints, nothing. He wants to hear about Barzug and the Titan Beetle.
And you, Barzug fully has to be told to come back and help with the barrels. She is so enthused about telling you this. And eventually, Val, you are now yoinked up as well. And again, you, Kaskrin, have also been there and just kind of like perched with your gills wet, just your head just barely above water throughout this entire time as well. And everyone just kind of looks around. And Giannis, looks at Val, looks at Kaskrin.
Val is not peeking her head up out of the water. She gets, like, set down. She sticks a thumbs up out and then just, like, is in her barrel. Like, like the water is gross enough that they can't see her and she's just going to be
you're gonna
in the bottom.
Terminator to it. Your thumbs up and then slowly sink it back.
No,
up.
Just like a quick, oh, yeah, I'm here. I'm good.
Just knees to chest.
Yeah,
just
like...
So, how are you going to get us out of here? Did you guys bring, like, a dolly or something?
Unfortunately, we did not, but I have a solution. Kavos, you have previously gone on at length about your Abbey's fine history in brewing, have you not? Kavos looks over. He grins. Smash cut to the two barrels that you guys reside in. Now, with a lid on them, being kicked and rolled across the island.
Val immediately vomits.
It's already pretty gross. What's a little more grossness in that water?
Kaskrin doesn't vomit because he has advantage on his constitution saving throws.
That's against poison. This is just
oh,
motion.
Oh, shoot, you're right.
This is just motion sickness.
Double vomit.
After I want to say a few minutes of rolling, but it's like...
And Cashman's like knocking on the thing and like, get me out of here.
All you guys are hearing is sloshing and just the occasional kind of thump as someone kicks the barrel forward. And eventually you hear a couple of solid thumps on one end of the barrel. And the contents of the barrel, you guys very much included, come spilling out of it. And very suddenly you guys find yourselves in much fresher, clearer water. As you look around and you see you've made it into the waveless lake. Giannis looks kind of down at you and you can tell Kavos has just absolutely bonked open these barrels. And Giannis says, well, we figured you would appreciate some fresh water for the barrels. And the boat is waiting whenever you are ready. We'll refill these and be on our way back to the city. And you can see that the boat that at least three of you took over here, crewed by old Tom, is right there on the shore. Not a child in sight, thankfully, but is waiting there for your guys' collective return.
Thanks. I think I'll swim. And Val just leaves. Val just swims away.
It's a very long... Oh, okay.
Kaskrin was about to get on the boat, but actually... With Val leaving, this is kind of nice, actually. Like, being in clear, fresh water and, like, being able to swim like this, pretty good.
We do not have any swim bonuses, to be clear. We have gills.
It's distressingly it's hilarious how little swim bonuses you have.
Actually, you could theoretically sink to the bottom.
Kaskrin immediately begins sinking.
Yeah, just walking. Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
He, like, tries to wave and is just like, oh, my.
That was a good one, actually. Yeah. That sounded very believable. The two of you go
off to nowhere.
And everyone just kind of is standing on the shore and just looks at each other. Just looks at, well, probably specifically looks at Checkers and Selv to be like, are they okay? What do we do?
I guess we could just kind of keep pace with where we think they are. I'm ready to head back.
Checkers slings his new net cape over his mouth and nose like a mysterious individual and just says, farewell. And he just, like, slides into the water behind Val.
I think you mean Netscape.
No, I was just making a comment that literally all I can think about is Darkwing Duck.
Yeah. You are correct, actually. Yeah. That is 100% the vibe.
Self,
how's it feel to be the only member of the Golden Tree Guild?
Left behind with the Verdant Wing. Sorry. I did it first, so Val was not the one to leave you behind.
I don't have a choice. I just think.
All eyes are on Checkers as he dramatically flops into the lake. Probably not flops. He's very, very graceful. And he hits the water, and there's a moment, I would imagine, of relief when no splash happens. And he just disappears underneath the surface. But then there's just a moment where that relief is replaced by confusion and fear, because Checkers is gone, fully gone. Like, you didn't see him swim off. It's a crystal clear lake. Even though a lot of dirt has been kind of churned up over the last couple hours, it still is already becoming that same kind of miraculously clear, where you can almost see all the way to the bottom kind of vibe. Checkers is gone.
So Selv is going to kind of look from the spot where Checkers had, I imagine, backwards walked into the water.
Correct.
And then just kind of like smiling, like, you know, all right, everything's kind of back to normal, sort of. And then just look around and realize that he now has to make the trip back with Old Tom and probably the entire Verdant Wave.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Because I think Mango was not there.
Yeah.
And so it is literally only Selv.
Selv will kind of like look up from a little bit of, you know, is like smiling, and then just kind of realize what's about to happen. And then just kind of resign himself to,
I'm going to be on the boat for a while with everybody here.
Saved your dragon bacon once more, Asterlin.
Yes, you're getting good at doing that.
So, Kavos won't tell us who won the tournament. It's been driving me crazy.
Well,
and then Selv will kind of look towards Kavos and give him the slight nod that Kavos had given him previously when Checkers had asked, and just say,
it would be impolite of me to discuss that without the relevant parties all being here. It's really not my story to tell.
Very suddenly, you get slapped on the back with an oar, and Old Tom comes over right up in all of your guys' faces and is like, all right, get back on there. Let's go back to the boat. Come on. Let's go. Don't dilly down.
Yes, of course, sir.
And I'll just kind of, Selv will just kind of motion the others to kind of get on the boat. Oh, and he'll just speed walk over there and get in.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hey everyone, Jonathan here with the mid-roll. If you're looking for the hottest frog memes around, join the Reckless Attack community on Discord. You can find a link to it in the show notes of our latest episodes or on our website, recklessattack.com. Want to support the show? Tell a friend or check out our Patreon at patreon.com/recklessattack, where you can get access to our behind-the-screen talkback show as well as our new Reckless the Snack series, where we eat snacks, hang out, and just talk about whatever's on our mind. Thanks so much for listening to us, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the episode.
Does anyone have anything in this exact moment that they want to do or explore in the lake, in whatever?
The only thing I had was Val goes and finds a seaweedy place to go cry.
And I think that's very good and valid. Uh-huh. So, like, absolutely. And boy, you are so wise in the natural world that you're able to find a fully uninterrupted bed of seaweed and or kelp or whatever.
She wants, like, a kelp forest.
Right,
so she
exactly.
She can go, like, hide and just cry in peace.
The only thing Checkers will do in this moment is he's going to harass Caskrin with his own rendition of Under the Sea from The Little Mermaid.
And that goes like how, Jonathan?
Under the lake. Under the lake.
Stop it.
You have no idea where that voice is coming from, Caskrin. The whole time. It's obviously Checkers' voice, and somehow Checkers' voice sounds much better underwater than it does above ground. You've never really heard it with these acoustics before.
True, yeah. There's like almost this like haunting aria about it.
Yeah, it echoes.
It's beautiful. once everyone finds their way back to the shore after long walks, melodic swimming, an awkward boat ride, or, you know, a nice cry in a kelp forest, you guys are met by a large contingent of the Red Guard. There are several people who are there, including Vina Calvetta, and kind of as soon as you guys come up to the shore at your kind of staggered pace, I presume you tell her some amount of the story.
And Casper's just kind of like standing there in the water telling Vina, I really thought I would have worn off by now. And yet here we are.
She shakes her head at you, Kaskrin, as you're just talking and just being like, yeah, this sucks, essentially. And she's like, whatever you found, I certainly don't understand it yet, but we will. Whatever it is that you guys did today and went through and whatever you're going through now, I'm sorry about it, but also it seems like you've once again done something very important for the city. And I thank you as always.
Thal will kind of just jump in and say, we may request some of the Undying Legion's assistance because, if I remember correctly, we found a skeleton at the same place we found the net. And it would, just putting together the pieces of a missing body of a saint that had a net that matched and glowed when it entered the cave. That skeleton was found in the same cave we found the pious. And actually, Checkers has a good idea of where it is. And then Val will mind link Checkers so she doesn't rat him out in front of Vina of like, you have a bone. You have a piece of the saint.
Yeah.
And you need to put it back with the rest of the saint.
When Sophie remembered that pre-recording, everyone's like, holy shit, he does. what a pull.
Yeah, but I don't want to tell her that right now.
That's why I'm mind-linking you. And then Val will keep addressing everyone and say, Selv and Checkers can lead others to help retrieve those bones and we can put them in the proper resting place.
That's an excellent observation. We are still being conservative with our patrol paths for the bones. But I'm sure we can task some members of the Red Guard. We will speak to the Verdant Wave, and I'm sure that they would appreciate your guys' assistance as much as you're kind of able to direct them to the right place.
Do we have any idea how the bones got there in the first place? I mean, they're a long way from home.
They may never have been actually on the island. Maybe that was just a story.
I think if you go to the length of etching out, may my bones damn the what was it? What did we say?
I think it's very funny that Kaskrin is like whatever it was.
Whatever we said, like that's a pretty metal thing to do, and then to not put your bones there seems like a real missed opportunity.
I think both options are possible. What is most important is that whatever protection that apparently was there was gone enough for this creature to, it sounds like, become active, to awaken, to gather power, to open a breach between planes, which I have no idea how we're going to tackle that. But either there is the good news that they were never there, and simply returning the bones to their rightful place will aid a degree of protection. Or we will get that protection, but we have to consider that the remains were moved at some point.
Val would chime in and note that in addition to the presumed bones protection or saint's bones protection, there were several wards etched on the walls as well. Azan would know better than I the intricacies of them, but perhaps those wards were enough to protect without the saint's bones, and we can restore them.
At about that time, an older woman kind of approaches you guys, who is wearing, we haven't actually really talked about this on screen all that much, but is actually wearing the robes of someone who serves at the medical center. Like, this is the equivalent of, like, you know, fantasy scrubs kind of situation, but is very clearly has kind of a, God, is it too morose to say that it's like a red outfit? Like, it takes with the theme of the city, but also it's like, oh no, they're hiding the blood. You
absolutely
know?
They would. The red city of Agmar's medical team would be dressed in red.
Right? Probably.
Yeah,
like,
I
that
agree.
Is not something that, like, medical doctors would have the time or effort to change.
That's probably.
They're like, our scrubs have always been red. We don't care what that red may or may not represent. It's easy. It works. We're sticking with it. They don't have time to agree on a new scrub color.
And I feel like, too, in the fiction of Agmar, like, the red would not be a morose thing. It would just be like, oh, it's the color of Agmar. So
yeah.
It's like right. More things are red.
Everyone's just used to things being
right.
a dark blood red.
Right.
Everyone's like, yeah, that's just like what our streetlights are colored. It's fine. So this older woman comes up to you, and she is probably in her, you know, 60s or 70s, but still seems fairly spry for her age, and kind of bustles up and is like, all right, the patients, where are they?
You just see Val's hand shoot out of the water.
Okay, that's okay. And she goes into her, like, she has like an action pouch kind of like slung across her side, and she just kind of hikes up her robe and just like traipses into the water and is going through her you know kind of medical fanny pack.
Kaskrin is also floating next to you and takes note of the action pouch and is like, oh man, that's actually really cool. Where did you get that?
Standard issue, dearie. Standard issue. It's very helpful for on the go curse breaking. And she pulls out a sheet of like a scroll of something and just shakes her head of potion administration. She pulls out a vial of something of
Val, while she is searching through different things, I think would be giving her a rundown of the things Val has already tried.
Got it. Okay. She is treating you with a good amount of, you know, kind of care, respect, but there's a little bit of tinge of like, there's always the joke of like doctors make the worst patients, you know? And so it's like, she's like, I'm listening. I hear that. Mm-hmm. But also, did you restart your router? I know you said you restarted your computer, but like, just you need to answer.
Yeah.
Did you restart your router?
And Val like understands that, but is hanging on by an emotional thread.
Bedside manner, though, very impeccable for this being a very strange situation.
Yes.
And she's like, oh, all right. If I use these bandages with the blessing on them, young man. And she kind of goes up to Kaskrin and just starts wrapping bandages around your gills, like at your neck. And as soon as you start choking, she's like, nope, okay, that's fine. We're trying things out. And this goes on for a couple minutes. And eventually a couple other members of the medical staff come up and nothing that they're trying is working. This older lady who has been kind of like bossing everyone around is just like, I don't think I've ever seen anything like this. This is troubling. We may need some more time, but I think this is a magical curse-like affliction, and I simply don't think we have the kind of raw arcane power to address this. I'm so sorry.
Val is really working hard not to get any part of her body out of the water. One, for the burning thing, but also as like a kind of like a layer of to like mask herself, because she is, again, not in a good place right now. So she'll kind of like tug on this woman's robes and be like, excuse me, did I get your name? I'm so sorry if I did.
My name is Jeanette Osseret. I'm so sorry that we had to meet under these circumstances, but we're really focused on giving you, you know, fixing this. We're going to make sure that you have dedicated resources to this. And she reaches into her bag and pulls out a little baggie of crackers, of peanut butter crackers, and hands it to you.
Ooh, dips.
You.
There's plenty. And just keeps
Val
reaching
literally,
in.
Val pushes Cass away. He's like, get out of here. But then Val, like, kind of in a whisper, like, will motion Jeanette to kind of like come closer to the water to get a good, like.
She fully like kneels down into the
perfect.
Water.
Val will be like, I'm so sorry. I would like to talk to you privately. Would it be okay if I mind linked you?
Oh, of course. Yeah, no, psychic communication was actually one of my focuses when I was going through residency. So it'll actually be a real treat for me.
Cool, cool, cool. Great. And Val will mind link Jeanette and just be like, Hey, so I'm like kind of freaking out right now. Could you write a letter to my mom? She is one of the librarians at Rockma and can like probably help figure this out. But again, I'm like kind of freaking out. I'm really trying to hold it together. So I need to go cry again in my kelp forest. I appreciate your hard work and effort. But yeah, here's my mom's information. And Val will like give her the information take to the post office.
She would even say like, you know, I'm happy to make sure this happens. We have a team of social workers at the medical center actually who I'll forward this on to. They're really, really great. We'll make sure that it gets express delivered through the mail system that is very well fleshed out, as we all know, in fiction here on the Reckless Attack podcast. Absolutely, we'll make sure that gets taken care of. I'm so sorry, but we'll get this figured out, I promise.
Can I insert that while Val and Jeanette are having this lovely, heartfelt conversation over Mind Link, Checkers is just tossing bits of granola into the space where Kaskrin's at, and it's going, here, fishy, fishy, here, fishy, fishy, fishy.
I'm mad about it, but I am going for that granola.
You don't know if it's that Val's granola skills are so powerful and like they're so naturally crunchy and crisp and delightful, or if it is that your aquatic palate has changed, but like, still good, man. It's like you feel a little bit maybe kind of like a goldfish, but like, it is tasty and it's kind of been a long day.
Right, yeah. Like, he needs that emotional support, granola, but also like, hey, Checkers, can you get me one of those cool pouches?
Steal it from the medical
center? Yeah. Did you see how much they can hold? Like, I know it's not magical, but like, it looks so organized.
While Checkers and Cass are talking about the fanny packs, Val has,
excuse me, yes. Val has, action pouches. Action.
Val has finished her conversation with Jeanette and has disappeared.
It's gone once more. Yeah. Absolutely.
Checkers has also similarly disappeared with the net over his nose and mouth. I am the knight. And he runs off to go find an action pouch.
I don't know if he's using that correctly or not. I don't know.
Vina turns to you, Selv, as once again the lone member of the Golden Tree Guild left on the shore.
Cass is in the water.
Right, left on the shore. Right, exactly. Well, and he's also again being fed like a goldfish, so he's busy.
Well, Checkers went away.
That's true.
Sometimes I just crave the simple life, you know, and it's just eating granola.
Underwater.
Yeah.
And she turns to you, Selv, and she just says, all right, I want to make sure that I alert everyone properly about this, and also put together a group to go out and retrieve the remains. First, can I count on you and presumably Checkers, she says as she looks around a little bit, to assist in the recovery efforts?
Absolutely. I'm fairly certain that Checkers will not pass up a chance to go outside the wall.
As long as one of you is there, that's certainly more than enough.
Yes, I will definitely be there, and I will hope Checkers will be as well.
Once you guys have kind of reconvened and are finished with the medical team, just having overheard a little bit of what the medical team is seeing and trying, and, well, seeing that clearly your guildmates still are underwater.
And are undergoing clear mental distress.
Yeah, yeah, and are still not well about it.
Val kept it together. No one knows she's under mental distress. They just know she went away.
Yes,
Kaskrin is undergoing some kind of psychosis. He's just like totally okay with eating granola like a goldfish.
He's regressing.
And Vina says, if the medical team is not able to address this, we don't have a sure way of helping, it seems like. If I could entrust to you as the member who is not actively going through whatever they're going through, is there anything, anyone that you all have encountered, and I will ask the Verdant Wave as well too, of course, but who might be able to assist should we need outside help?
The first people that come to mind are the Council at Deepwood. In my experience, they seem to have extensive knowledge of a lot of this fancy, magical, finger-waggling, possible curses.
And curse-based things, yeah.
Yes.
Makes sense.
That would be where I would start.
That is relieving to hear that there's maybe some options out there. Anything that you all need, Please let me know. Please let the guards here know. Once again, and she kind of extends her hand out to you. Thank you for everything that you guys have done. We'll try our best to take it from here.
Of course, of course.
I'll give her a bow and kind of step off to go by the pier to get a hold of if I see Cass or Val around and find out what they want to do.
This is actually, now that I think about it, this is probably only late afternoon. Because as I recall, Checkers, this was all over lunch break.
Yeah,
is when this saga started. So it's probably maybe early evening. It took a while for people to get to and from, all that good stuff. But I, Nathan, will ask, Kaskrin and Valeska, You are contained to water. There's no nice way to put it. As a reminder to you guys and to our listeners, just simply being out of water is physically harmful for you. It burns at your skin. And so wherever you're staying, and again, it can be multiple locations, it can be a combination of things, it can be wherever. It can just be, I'm living my barrel life, and I'm going to walk around like an old-timey 49er who's lost his clothes in a gambling bet, and I just have suspenders in a barrel. Whatever it is. That is the reality of your lives for the next question mark period of time.
It's going to be like, what's her name? Cassandra from Doctor Who. Moisturize.
Oh, I do know the reference. Where do the two of you want to be? And again, it can be a different answer. Like it can be like, I spend some time here. I spend some time here. I go back and forth. First few days, I'm blah, 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 whatever.
I think Val will at least spend the first night in the Waveless Lake. She has found her little kelp forest. This is her comfort space right now. She's going to do a couple sendings, two specifically. She's spending the rest of her third level spell.
Yep, seems reasonable.
We'll probably pray because this is the time you pray right now.
And what else is there to do?
Yeah. And so she'll have like conversations, try to calm herself down, but really just like, she's like, I'm just gonna cry right now. This is my night to cry, and I'm gonna chill here for a minute.
You do get a visit at some point from a member of the medical center who comes by just to check on you. She actually, you can see her, she swigs a potion of like water breathing and then like walks underwater, like has like a weighted action pouch that's kind of helping hold her
They're
down.
So versatile.
I know. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
That's why it's an action pouch.
That's right. Ready for action. And, you know, comes, checks on you, provides whatever aid it is that Val is interested in needing of, open to, etc. And promises to continue to check in during these unprecedented times.
Can I also add that Mango would have joined you at some point during the day?
Perfect.
And you and Mango can just hang out in the kelp forest. He's got nothing else to do. He just hangs out with you and just chills, and the two of you have a nice time.
Amazing.
And he'll take you wherever you want to go.
He can swim.
He can swim. He's got the barrel of water. He's there for you, Val.
Great.
Wow, I feel so loved. Checkers is here for Kaskrin. Yeah. He got you an action pouch.
Hell yeah.
He can also swim.
He can also swim.
He does not have a barrel.
Correct. Checkers is really splitting his emotional energy between Cass and Val right now. Mm-hmm. In different ways, of course. Mm-hmm.
Kaskrin was reasonably excited. Like, this is a pretty novel experience because he was able to swim around the Waveless Lake and really get to see a new part of the city in a new way he's never seen before. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, getting to see the city? Great. Also, it's cold. Also, I'm getting pretty pruny, and I can't really get out.
It's starting to be fall kind of temperatures now, and it'd be one thing, oh, man, a nice summer's day, cool, refreshing. No, it's not the nicest.
Right. And so he's trying to get, like, his creature comforts and realizing, like, he can't go back to his bed. Mm-mm. He can't even have a drink because like he just tries to put it into his mouth and it just like sloshes all over where into the lake, and it's just like, okay, that's out. Checkers, you got some waterproof cards?
Well, I did steal Self's chess kit. I'm sure we can play that underwater. No.
It's made of stone, probably, so it's very nice. I'm sure it would sink right down.
And there's just like, it, you know, it's like, oh, the things that I could normally do, I can't do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he takes a while to reorganize, you know, the stuff in his inventory into the action pouch. And then it's like...
See, I'm just imagining somebody from the medical staff who's not a social worker just marching out to the lake and being like, no, 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 give that back.
No, it's mine. I found it. Finders keepers.
It was a gift from a friend. A trusted, beloved friend.
We have trekking runes on all of our action pouches.
Exactly. Cass and Val, it is a unfun experience. No matter where you are, it is not a fun time. No matter how many frogs are near you, it is long. It is monotonous. There's a beautiful underwater world to explore, but also it's, yeah, you're stuck. It's kind of cold. You're just uncomfortable.
I think at some point after Val, like, and Mango do a lap or two of the Waveless Lake, and she like makes some mental notes because she can't write on paper or parchment right now. And she gets a little chilly. She would probably crawl into the barrel and have Mango take her to the hot spring.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Just to kind of do the kind of hot cold kind of combo.
Mm-hmm.
What I would like to do, it turns into days. There's no easy way to say it. The medical staff is working really hard. They check in with you multiple times a day. Jeanette Osseret really comes by. She's kind of your case manager, basically. But one day, something nice happens to you. And I think we should all suggest something that not the guilders did to help ease your guys' time in the Waveless Lake, / hot spring, / wherever you are, but something that people in the city did to comfort you guys over the next couple days. I will begin with my suggestion. On the dawn of the second day, the two of you, the sun has come up. Maybe you kind of like wave to acknowledge, hello, neither of us have been eaten by a centipede in the night. Great. You guys see on the bank of the lake, amidst the kind of hustle and bustle that is already kind of starting up with fisher people, with the mongers, with anyone who is out there at the lake, you see actually two familiar shapes. First, you see a very faint outline of a dwarf, almost like a trick of the light, standing there next to a large, horrifying, yet slightly comforting spider person. As Andromeda and Titanius stand there. Specifically, Titanius is there in his ghostly form with a stack of books, serving as almost a pedestal that he is standing on. Maybe two. There's two stacks of books that he's almost wearing as shoes. As soon as you guys, you know, kind of get into sight of the shoreline, they wave you guys over, and at their feet are some books. And they explain, this is something that they've been working on a little bit, but specifically really kind of pushed it into overdrive with Etrus the last couple of days. They produce something that looks a little bit like a still that is, you know, kind of taking up liquid into vapor and running it through a series of funnels and spirals and doing some obvious science-y kind of things and distilling it into droplets. And they explain that just hold whatever item that you want to take with you and have it get, you know, 4 to 6 drops. And that'll make whatever you are consuming, you know, try to rub it around, getting all the pages, whatever, will make it waterproof for about an hour. And they now have several months of information on what kind of books that you guys like. They really cross-referenced kind of all the various things that you've already read, that you might be reading. They pulled stuff off of your wait list, and it's some primo, primo stuff.
Nice. One of my sendings was to Andromeda.
Perfect.
It was, hi, I have gills now and I'm stuck in the lake. Can you research getting rid of gills and St. Stillwater? Any waterproof books in library? Glad she really came through.
30, most of the 30 words in reply are, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I can't believe that happened to you. What happened? You'll have to tell me everything. I'm going to come. You're at the Waveless Lake right now. Yes, I'll help. And that's basically was the vibe of it.
A couple days later, the two of you just find sitting on the shore a couple pieces of paper underneath a rock. And when you go to grab it, you just see written in crayon across the top of the first sheet of paper, "The best day ever." And underneath is a story about how three kids were spending the day in community service to the city of Agmar, and how they met a cool frog who taught them all kinds of great tricks, and he sent them off to their secret hideout. And then they were attacked and they were scared until a group of adventurers came by to save them and send them home. And there's little crayon drawings of what those adventurers look like. And there's Cass, Val, Selv, and of course, standing at the top, Checkers.
And at some point, too, I imagine that there is a small regiment of folks that come down to the Waveless Lake. And it's a real mix. You know, there's some young teenagers, there's some older men. Most of them seem to be in, like, decent fighting shape. But these are all of the recruits from the classes that Selv and Kaskrin have been putting on, the community training days at the guild. It seems that someone had the bright idea to train down by the lake so Kaskrin could watch and feel like he was a part of it again. And so, like, the training that they're undergoing is grueling because they're running through the sand. Like, it's brutal. They're getting tossed into the water, having to come out. Like, there's a giant half-orc barbarian there who's just, like, throwing people in the lake and seeing if they'll survive or not.
Trying to skip them like a stone to see how far they can go.
And, like, at the end of the training session, they're all white. Mm-hmm. But Kaskrin feels happy. He feels really satisfied and really grateful that they took the time to include him in this.
So, one evening, as you are both making your way back to the shore, specifically around the pier, you see a small sign has been put out that just says, "For Cass and Val, to keep you thirsty enough to come back." And you see a series of three glass vials. And inside of it, you see somebody had taken a handful of reeds and had sewn them together to make a straw. Each of the glass vials is labeled. One of them says Mal's wort. One of them says genius. And it just looks like cascades of foam kind of coming down the inside of this vial. And one of them, it looks kind of a little watery, and it says, "Miller's Delight." And they are, in fact, what they are labeled.
I think after the initial day and Val getting some good cries out, she does, like, start to enjoy having gills and, you know, see what that's like. And she's swimming around with Mango. But then she kind of gets, like, a little listless, and it's like she normally has a lot of things to do. She's helping people. She has her to-do lists. That is all out the window right now. I think, like, she finds herself swimming past the fishing piers a lot because, like, if she can't be hustling and bustling, she can be, like, around the hustle and bustle kind of thing. And
I thought she was going to try to, like, trick people into thinking they caught a really big one.
Val would never. Checkers.
Checkers spends 8 hours a day doing it. That's all. That's where he is. If you don't see him, he's at
hooks,
the lake.
Hooks one fishing rod to another one so they can fight back and forth.
Yeah. And I think some of the fishermen, like, start to realize this, and they wave her over, and one of them, I was just trying to think of an old name, but I didn't.
Old Jim.
Old Jim.
Albert.
Could be old.
I was going with three letters. Old Jim waves Val over And
he's 16 years old.
it's more of an honorific. At the Waveless Lake.
Sailor, you know. But he's like, "Hey, I really screwed up, and I dropped my wedding ring under the dock like ages ago. I've got a new one now. Like it's been that long. But since you can breathe underwater, could you see if you can find it?" And like, Val can clearly tell that this man is really just like seen somebody who has not done nothing for a very long time. He can see like right through her and just like, this is something for you to do. This is a goal you can achieve. And Val's like, "You know what? Yeah, I will give it a try." And then I think Cass kind of falls into the same problem of he can enjoy his downtime a little bit more than Val. But Val's like, at the end of the day, he's like, "Cass, I found this wedding ring. It was like, man, it really made me feel good about it." And then the next day, Val and Cass just get enlisted by all the people working on the piers.
All the clumsy people on the piers.
Anyone. Like, they could just like, keep dropping things in. And, like, they are just trying. They all understand. Like, these are people who spend all of their days, like working very long hours. And, like, because they love it and, like, can make a living at it. But it's just, like, they kind of understand people who aren't used to not doing things.
They wait for you to leave the lake and go back to the hot spring, and they're just dumping shit into the pier from the pier. Of like
one man comes up. "I lost my 1987 special edition festival pog, please. My marriage is on the rocks, so I can't. It's one thing if we could just, please, if you could help me." And boy, do you. And suddenly you are gifted with magic metal detectors, and it's a really, really great activity. The days turn a little nicer. It's still long, for sure. But there is always a pile of food, like the equivalent of casseroles, waiting for you guys.
I'd like to imagine that, like, we and, like, the townsfolk and, like, people who are on the lake all the time found like a spot that's like a little bit deeper but close to shore, so like we're not like
having
belly flopping kind of like
exactly
yeah right
not even there's they have like a floated like almost like
raft,
pier kind
yeah.
of kind of thing.
Actually, can I offer the suggestion that Cass use Move Earth to actually create a spot for you guys?
Ooh, yeah, there you go.
Good.
And I want to say, Checkers makes sure to feed his fish regularly.
Taking very good care.
Yeah, very good care.
But you
showing
know,
responsibility.
You know how those Cascarin fish can get.
Yes.
They're very finicky. They have very specific needs.
And originally it was like, okay, this was a fun idea. And then I was like, but wait, what if I got really good at this?
You just see Cass like jumping out of
the Yeah, line. And it's like, I could grab it and eat it, but like, can I catch it with my
Shamu
mouth?
Shamu, suddenly.
Yeah.
And we're just doing tricks in the way it's like, he's breaching.
I'm not doing anything else.
Yeah. I love to imagine like, yeah, Mango's under the water basically just juggling Cass so he can, because Cass can't jump that high, so Mango's just like lifting
him
out of
the air. Bounce him up. So the days pass a little bit kinder than it seemed like they were going to. But it does become clear that it is a little bit out of the depth of the medical center. Again, people at the library are working, but spells were really a thing that were housed in the library, because that's not really the Pentarchy style, right? Mm-hmm. Is like, oh, we're going to leave spells for fucking peons to cast? No, I don't think so. So eventually, word does get past Deepwood. Probably you guys are even asked to send like Ascending or something like that to get in contact with them. Eventually, the two of you see dark shadows circling above the city. You can tell that these are new dark shadows. These are not the shadow of old Bill come once again to do that thing that pelicans do where they just kind of like clomp their beak on things to see how big they are, to see if they can eat them.
It's like a shark, just testing.
Testing it out. Old Bill's done a couple pass-bys. You know, hasn't done anything yet. But
yeah, but that's been easily the most terrifying part of the day. We're like, it's normally pretty chill. And then we see the sky darken as Old Bill passes over us. Because, like, to him, you know, we probably look like seals.
Yeah, he's got...
We are both 5 feet or less.
You would
old
fit.
Old Bill. Yeah,
you would
he
fit,
could eat us.
Unfortunately. But he's, again, he's done he's just kind of measuring you for whatever ends he may determine later. But these are different shadows. These are the shadows of giant ravens. You see these giant ravens start to descend, and you guys can actually see in the sky a ripple, as if an invisible barrier has been opened slightly for their arrival. And soon, these giant birds, as well as their mounts, land in front of you all. Shortly thereafter, or probably essentially at the same time, you see your guildmates come up. You see some members of the Red Guard. You'd actually see Paulus Calvetta, who's probably gone to the island a couple times and actually would have helped you guys retrieve the remains of the saint, which we will discuss at a later time. But there's just this kind of convergence, and probably a number of Red Guards have to like stop the crowd from forming and be like, no, you have
to pet that bird.
Stay away from these birds.
Look at these birds.
You know Thea is really trying to run through that crowd and get close to that bird.
Absolutely. And the mounts, you know, kind of slide off the wings. And one of them is the diminutive individual, Juniper, the raven
Juniper.
Mount, the halfling raven mount. And you actually see, much slower off of the same raven, slide an old man, Filigrin Pines, who you may or may not remember. As a member, most importantly, a member of the Council of Elders.
We didn't need to kidnap him. He just came right to us.
Who maybe there was a misunderstanding as to side everyone was on, I guess.
We don't know what Juniper did to get him here.
I suppose that could be true. I want to believe, suspect everyone. But you see, again, Filigrin Pines, wisps of hair, very, very, very old. And he smiles at you all and is like, the Golden Tree Guild, we meet once more. It is very, very good to see you all. I'm here to help. And he kind of like jokingly raises his hands as if he's giving up.
And, good one.
And anyway.
I guess I won't need these.
Puts away a billy club. I was happy to join Juniper. He didn't have to twist my arm at all. We have much to discuss, but first, let me please come as close as is comfortable to the shore. And he actually does kind of start to very slowly, like, stick out one sandaled foot after another and, like, scoot one, you know, 6-inch gap at a time. But comes
I feel like I, like, mind link Jeanette and be like, Jeanette, please help.
Yes, she comes up and like is there helping brace him essentially. And so he takes one of you guys, whoever kind of like steps.
I push Cass up first.
He takes Val and kind of you know,
I pushed Cass in front.
Oh, I thought you were pushing Cass out of the way.
No, I pushed
get
him
these gills the fuck off me. He comes up to you, Kaskrin, and, you know, he does kind of like does the old man sit where it's like slowly more kind of like falls to the ground. Uh-huh. It's a controlled fall into the water. And he says, would it be all right if I examined your neck?
Of course, of course. And like Kaskrin will get into like a good, comfortable position for him to like poke around.
And he says, it's interesting. And I haven't. Does remind me of it's could be, and it's very interesting. And he kind of really does like a full once over, and he says, all right. Well, I haven't seen this exactly before, but I think this should do the trick. And he actually does, out of nowhere, just clamps your gills down, and begins. He looks at you very intently in the eye, and says just a very short magical phrase. You certainly don't understand, but you can tell reverberates with a deep, powerful magic. Just as you are starting to really feel the pressure of like, oh God, I can't breathe. Oh God, my skin is burning a little bit. This is going from uncomfortable to unsustainable. You are relieved. All of the uncomfortability, all of the like instinctual drive to be underwater is gone. And you take this like gasp of breath
right
through your mouth, and the gills are gone.
All right. How do you feel, young man?
Oh. Actually pretty good, I guess. And he, like, you know, tries to step a little bit further above the water, and, like, he realizes the burning sensation is gone, and, like, takes a few deep lungfuls of air, and he says, wow, I think that did it.
How's Cass's color?
He is exceptionally wrinkly, but otherwise looks like Cassgren. And he says, oh, very good, very good. Oh, please, take some of these. And he hands you, from out of nowhere, he just mumbles something under his breath, and he holds out a fist, and his fist kind of expands a little bit, and then he holds out, and there's four good berries in there. And he's like, oh, please, take these. It'll help the recovery process.
That was going to be butterscotch.
Mm-hmm. He takes them.
They're butterscotch flavored.
Werther's.
Yeah, he takes one and eats one.
Butterscotch.
Hell yeah.
And
kills a man for a whole day.
and you as well, please, Valeska.
Val will now more eagerly.
The process is much faster this time around. He's able to pretty much get straight to it. Mm-hmm. And you two kind of feel that very immediate relief of all of it. Actually, everyone who is around, because there is a crowd that is gathered, cheers, and it's like, you know, kind of sees you guys emerge. There's a little bit of a chatter, and kind of once everyone puts it together, there's a cheer that rises up as you guys emerge from the lake. It goes on for a little bit.
I feel like Val and Cass high five.
Yeah,
it is soggy. You guys are really feeling how fucking terrible all of your clothes feel right now. Yeah. Like, maybe you've gotten some, like,
there's
fantasy
swimsuits.
There's definitely
been an outfit change, because we were in, like, full armor.
Right, yeah. There was, like, some chafing, and I was like, oh, we gotta fix this.
That makes sense. But you are cold, you are uncomfortable, you're feeling a little exposed, but also, it's better than the alternative. The cheering goes on for a little bit, and Filigran actually comes up to Checkers and Selv, and he kind of grabs you guys, and he's like, actually, we need to, unfortunately, go to anywhere that we would be able to speak privately. As much as I would like for this to continue, we have, I'm afraid, dire news.
Please, follow me to the guild hall.
You guys push through the cheering throngs. Flowers are thrown. Whole hot dishes are thrown at you. It's really becoming a whole spectacle. Luckily, you guys are forced to go at the pace of a very, very, very old man, so you still get to really soak in quite a lot of cheering, but
I feel like Berga is there, and she's just, like, collecting hot dishes.
Oh, yeah, right. Absolutely.
Yes. And, like, vacuum sealing them and freezing them for later.
Yes, exactly.
These go in the vault.
And you guys kind of settle, and Filigran waves off all of the hot dish servings, like, it can wait, it can wait. You guys eventually get usher them into maybe your meeting room or whatever. And over this walk, all of the Deepwood people have kind of grown a little more somber. Filigran just kind of nods and is, I'm glad you are all better. This is actually fortuitous. We had news to share. Juniper, if you would, please. Juniper steps forward and just swallows a little bit and is not uncomfortable. He's has a determined look in his face, a kind of ferocious look in his eye. And he says, long story short, last time we saw you all in the council chambers, we all met with, he sneers, that villain, that imposter, that traitor, who was looking for information, was looking to go deep into the woods. It's taken us some time, but we believe we know what the shepherd was after and what the shepherd found at the heart of Deepwood. And David, could you please tell everyone at the table and the listeners at home when we'll find out more about that story.
And we'll find out about that story next time on Reckless Attack.
Bye, everyone.
I want to know now.
Well, you'll see, she kind of smirks a little bit and she's like, well, as you know, you'll still have to submit the kind of permitting paperwork for that, same as you did now. But, you know, with your guys' track record, I'm sure you'll be able to get approved quickly.
What is the waveless like zoned as? Residential or commercial?
I don't know what you zone a whole lake that people fish on.
Public land.
Yeah, I guess so. Public land.
Nature. Well, reserve. It depends.
If you're living in the lake, is residential. If you're outside of the lake and fishing, it's commercial.
Ah.